This episode is sponsored by Verizon. Are you ready for your next assignment? As a leading communications technology company, Verizon is always looking for experienced leaders to step forward and help us stay competitive in the global marketplace. More than 10,000 veterans contribute their skills across our entire business. We're proud to work alongside them each day and fortunate to benefit from their outstanding skills, discipline, and experience. To learn more about joining our team, check out verizon.com/military. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help members of the military community succeed in their post-service career. Today's episode number 316 with Jason Jackson.
You know, I tell them I'm in the public sector, I'm working in government, and I'm just having the time of my life trying to make government services as effective and efficient as possible. And really, you know, within our administration here in the state of Nebraska, we're focused on hopefully making government work really well. We say that government is important. It should work well. We should be good stewards of the investments that Nebraskans are making in their government, and hopefully be providing good experiences in the same way that our private sector counterparts are. And so that's where my energies are focused today, both with respect to my leadership of administrative services and state personnel, and then on Governor Ricketts' staff.
I'm embarrassed to say this, but my interview with Jason was an eye-opening reminder of how many positions there are in public service that are not elected office. When I think of public service, I think of previous guests I've had on the show, like Sean Barney from episode 66, who ran for a seat in the House of Representatives. However, as Jason points out in this interview, for every one of those elected positions, there are thousands of others working behind the scenes, making things run efficiently, all serving their country in their own way. Jason makes some great points about why veterans may love a career in public service. He is also an exceptional example of someone who has done the heavy lifting to uncover and identify their personal values. As you'll learn in this interview, this has helped him keep an open mind when new and unexpected opportunities arise and decide whether this is the right change for himself and his family. Changes such as leaving Intuit after over 8 years in the private sector to make the switch to the public service sector. For those of you who like this episode, I recommend checking out three other episodes, each of which I'll add in the show notes for this episode, which are Beyond the Uniform number 66, Sean Barney, Purple Heart recipient to congressional candidate, episode number 70, Emily Chernayak, How New Politics is Helping Veterans of Both Parties Run for Office, and episode number 250, Navy Veteran to Congressional Candidate with Josh Welly. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find show notes with links to everything we discuss, as well as a text transcript. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter, where you'll get a first look at upcoming events, as well as special promotional offers. And with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Jason. Well, joining me today in Lincoln, Nebraska, my guest is Jason Jackson. Jason, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you, sir. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to give listeners a glimpse into your background. Jason is the State Personnel Director, the Nebraska Department of Administrative Services for the state of Nebraska. He started out at the Naval Academy as part of the illustrious class of 2002. He served as a surface warfare officer in the Navy for over 5 years, worked in a variety of roles at Intuit for nearly 9 years, and has been working for the state of Nebraska for nearly 4 years. He holds a Master's of Arts in Political Science from San Diego State University, as well as his Juris Doctorate from the Thomas Jefferson School of Law. So Jason, maybe to start things out, anything we're missing in the bio that you want listeners to know?
I'm a youth baseball coach. How's that?
I've nice.
A 11-year-old and an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. The 11 and the 8-year-old both play pretty competitive youth baseball. And so that's where I spend a lot of my recreational energy is on the ball field with them. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Well, maybe before we dive in, if you bumped into someone on the streets, maybe they served in the Army or the Navy, but they're like, hey, Jason, what do you do for a living? How do you answer that these days?
You know, I tell them I'm in the public sector, I'm working in government, and I'm just having the time of my life trying to make government services as effective and efficient as possible. And really, you know, within our administration here in the state of Nebraska, we're focused on hopefully making government work really well. We say that government is important. It should work well. We should be good stewards of the investments that Nebraskans are making in their government, and hopefully be providing good experiences in the same way that our private sector counterparts are. And so that's where my energies are focused today, both with respect to my leadership of administrative services and state personnel, and then on Governor Ricketts' staff.
Awesome. And I think one of the things, one of the many things that's really compelling about your story is you didn't actually start here. So let's rewind the clock. Take us back to that transition from the Navy, what the first job search was like, and how you ended up at Intuit.
It was arduous. I got to tell you, and you know, it's a story that I hear from others, and certainly I experienced just with respect to the difficulty of transitioning out of the military and then finding civilian employment that's meaningful and consistent with your own expectations. And, you know, so for me, I was having been a Service Academy graduate and then having been operational in the Navy and having obtained my graduate degree and then kind of transitioning, had high expectations of, you know, finding, you know, income growth opportunities and meaningful work. And yet you enter the workforce without necessarily a solid expectation or understanding about how your military skills transfer into a civilian context. And in fact, encountering a vocabulary that's completely different from the vocabulary that you've been using, and trying to kind of translate that in a way that your own experiences and skills are meaningful to potential employers. So that was certainly a challenge that I navigated with some difficulty as I was getting out. And so I was doing kind of the headhunter thing that a lot of, you know, former military, junior military officers do as they transition, and not really finding anything that was a particularly good fit. And really the ultimately the way I landed my first civilian opportunity at Intuit was, you know, the month I was transitioning, I was at my best friend from high school's wedding. And his dad was an executive at Intuit, and we just had a conversation about my job search. And within a week, he found me an operational role at Intuit that was just perfect for me and was in San Diego. And so my takeaway from that was, why wasn't I leveraging my personal network much earlier in the process? Because there were people who were willing to be advocates on my behalf, but I wasn't really taking advantage of that resource. So that was a key learning for me that I've taken with me with my career ever since. And what I try to impress upon other people at a similar stage in their careers, to make sure you're leveraging your personal network.
That's great. It makes me think of all of the guests I've had on the show, like a large majority, it feels like, have a similar story. And I think it's good to go through the reps of career fairs and headhunters or whatever your thing is, but to realize that, you know, everything has that potential. It's not like you're in work mode and then personal mode. These things blend together, and some of the most compelling opportunities might come from a friend of a friend or a friend's dad or anything like that. What about you? You spent a long time at Intuit, and it seems like you had this career in human resources. What led you to that, and what was your work like while at Intuit?
There's a saying in HR that everybody gets into HR by accident, and that was certainly true of me. So as I mentioned, when I started at Intuit, it was in an operations role. I was basically responsible for the operations management of their San Diego campus, which hosts their TurboTax business. And I was doing that for a couple of years when Intuit was going toward a strategic shift in their HR service delivery. And they wanted somebody with an operations background to lead that transition, not somebody with an HR background per se. And so that was my kind of step in the door to HR. And I found that I just really enjoyed the work. I loved that it was strategic in character, intellectually demanding, but at the same time, highly interpersonal. And so I just found it to be a really good fit in that respect. But it wasn't particularly purposeful and certainly not planned that I found my way on an HR career trajectory. It's just kind of, you know, similar to how a number of career moves I've taken have gone. You know, you try to do the best work that you can and where you've been placed, and then doors have a way of opening for you. And if it's consistent with your calling and your vocation, you step through those and try to meet the opportunity. And so that was the case there.
And, you know, you went through a what from an outside perspective seems like a pretty large transition. Take us through maybe the end of your time at Intuit and how you started on this different career path.
Yeah. So that was actually, you come out of the military and I was ready for a civilian career. But at the same time, I found shortly after that I missed the meaningfulness that is accompanied by public service work, right? And the sense of community and service and fulfillment that you get when you're working for a cause that's bigger than yourself and bigger than a company's bottom line. And I loved Intuit and I loved the company's mission. But at the same time, I felt like I was missing a little bit my calling towards public service. And so that had always been kind of an aspiration that remained out there that I was looking for an opportunity to step back into a public service role. And so having progressed in my career at Intuit, came to a point where I was ready for the next step in my career, and the opportunity with Governor Ricketts' staff opened up, and we took that step and I joined the Ricketts administration here in Nebraska.
How did that initial opportunity come about? Was that, did you meet Pete, or like, how did you even get your foot in the door for this new opportunity?
That is something that and I don't know your listeners, your faith tradition, but that's just something I attribute to God being at work in my life, because it was of no particular design of my own. The story is this. My family and I kind of fell in love with the Midwest when we were visiting. We had visited Lincoln on a vacation. The community was such that my wife and I both said, hey, you know what? We could imagine ourselves living here. We had a very rudimentary social network here in the community. And so my wife gave me the permission to start looking for job opportunities here in the area. And as I mentioned, I was interested in getting back into public service in some capacity. And there was an HR executive position that was actually open in one of our agencies here in state government that I applied for. And in applying for that job, I was interviewed by my predecessor in the governor's office, who was leaving the governor's service. And she said, you know, I think you'd actually be a better fit to come work for Governor Ricketts than to come into this role. And I had always loved politics. I had been interested in public service, as I said. And so it was really just a confluence of events completely beyond my control that brought me into the administration. I had an interview with Governor Ricketts and ultimately joined his team. But when I tell that story, particularly to people who are involved in politics, they're kind of blown away, because I wasn't in the governor's personal network at all. I didn't know him at all. I didn't raise any money for his campaign or some of the other things that are stereotypically associated with obtaining executive level positions in government. And to a large degree, that's a credit to the governor's leadership too, because his own background is that of a business person, not a politician. And so he looks to surround himself and leadership in his administration with people with business acumen and private sector experience. And so it was really just a wonderful fit another example of just kind of stepping through doors when they're opened and not of any particular design of mine, which is a little counterintuitive to an HR practitioner to be saying that that's your career trajectory, but that's mine in a nutshell.
I love that. I really appreciate your saying about how you were longing for that public service. And I think that for myself, when I was in the military, and I would imagine a lot of our listeners, you may not view your work in the military as public service in the same way that you view politics. But I think it's over the years, I've developed a much wider perspective of seeing how people choose to serve their country or their community. Even what you talked about with baseball, like that is an act of service and giving back to your community. And even serving as a leadership example for these younger men. So I hope, first of all, that listeners take away that sense of really expanding the horizon of ways that you can make a difference. And the second thing is, Jason, you're not alone by any stretch. Of so many of the guests I've had on the show, when they leave the military, even if they didn't appreciate it consciously while in the military, they feel that void of being part of something, like you said, bigger than themselves and giving back. And I think that's something for listeners to be cognizant about, is whether you realize it or not, that the work that you're doing in the military is meeting that need, very likely, of giving back, of having an act of contribution to our society. And that might be a great thing to explore after service, whether it's full-time like Jason's doing now, or with Little League, or in some other way, finding something bigger than yourself, finding some way to give back, because that's likely to be a vacancy you experience at some point in your post-military career.
I think that's thoughtful you say that, because it was certainly a greater void than I anticipated having. And, you know, sometimes when you're wearing the uniform and you're showing up for, you know, 0515 formation and doing some of those things that come with the inconveniences of the uniform, it can be easy to lose sight of the broader sense of service. And as you're contemplating next steps in your career, to anticipate that that'll be something that you'll need to fulfill for yourself somehow, because intrinsically there's something that called you to the military originally, and being assuring yourself that as you pursue your callings in different directions, that you're responding to your own personal sense of vocation. That's something that I've just developed awareness of as my career has kind of progressed and matured, that I need to always make sure I'm fulfilling for myself, is that that's a calling that I'm following, and that it's not ego or ambition or other types of things that call you to take a position or a job or climb some society's expectation of a particular career ladder, but stay focused on what truly motivates you and where you're called to go and where you think you can make a unique impact, whether it's where you're currently situated or the other activities that you're trying to surround yourself, right?
And I respect that in your story. It seems like there's at least a couple times where I love the way that you put it, which was more elegant, but the extent of like finding these doors or finding these opportunities and then wondering, okay, should I go through here? And I love this sense of calling as well. And I would challenge listeners, like I'm a huge advocate of that. I think the more aware you can be in your career, the more you can be working hard, but always, you know, paying attention to what's going on around you, you'll notice more of these opportunities. And sometimes we can get so heads down on something or so in love with the way we think our life should be, we're not open to that serendipity of a new opportunity, a change in scenery. I mean, you moved from San Diego to Nebraska, right?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, when I've tripped up in my career, it's usually I've had moments of low energy or disillusionment, or I felt stuck. It was usually attributable, with the advantage of hindsight, of really kind of, you know, being on my own plan of, okay, this is the next step that should happen, or that's the job I should be going to, or I'm not learning or growing enough in this current position. And in contrast, where I've had fulfillment, it's been where, hey, I've just tried to, you know, stay focused on the things that give me energy, have sufficient self-awareness for where I can add unique value, and then be attentive to when doors open, if that aligns with your personal true north and your personal values and where you get energy and your personal set of skills and gifts, having the courage to kind of walk through that door. And, you know, whatever successes I've had in my career, it's usually been when I've taken the step to go through that door that I didn't even anticipate opening.
And I'll put in the show notes a few interviews we've done with Jan Rutherford. I love what you were saying, because the impression I get is it's like you have a sense. I love your thought of true north. Like you have your set sense of your personal values, what you want, what skills you have. Like you're very self-aware. And then it's easy for you when you see these opportunities to say, okay, is this right for me? And I'll post the interviews for listeners in the show notes about Jan Rutherford, because I think we talk a lot about discovering these personal values, but that heavy lifting, which isn't easy, that time to take to figure out what's uniquely right for you, that makes it so much easier to say yes or no to opportunities. It's less about like, oh, there's a good dollar sign here, or that's a great location. It starts to be much more easy to say yes or no, and often saying no to great opportunities. And that's one question I want to kind of drill down on the work you're doing. But one question I had was that difficult? Like my story is that you were at Intuit, you're at this like extremely big, well-known company. I imagine you're earning a great salary, you're working with these people. And then to go to government, you know, to public service, to me, I'm guessing there's some change in pay there. There's probably some change in like egoic perception of the job or whatever that is. Was that a difficult thing for you to leave behind?
Oh, no question. I mean, so our whole family relocated from San Diego to Nebraska. We were coming to a new community, new job, government as opposed to private sector. My wife was 8 months pregnant at the time. We had three other children. We loved San Diego. We loved the community we were in. And so there was a lot of kind of just uncertainty that accompanied all of that. Not the least of which is, you know, having been comfortable, you know, both from a financial perspective, from a job perspective, from a relationship perspective, from a community perspective in San Diego, and taking a step into discomfort and uncertainty, but with the hope that it led to more fulfillment and a sense that there was, you know, something larger than we were currently experiencing, not just, you know, personally and professionally, but for our whole family. So there was definitely a huge leap that occurred there. Not the least of which, and you know, I know military families get this, but it's also just a family affair, right? And you know, my wife was uprooting her career and her job, and obviously our kids were transitioning schools, and all that was accompanied with that. But there was also a reasonable sense of optimism that we were joining a great team in a great state in a community we knew we wanted to be a part of. With where people wear their faith and their values on their sleeve, and there's a strong sense of family. And we knew that we could make an impact on our community and for our neighbors and for the people we were serving in a way that it would have been more difficult to do where we were situated. So there was an amount of risk that was associated with that, and certainly courage, particularly on my wife's part, but couldn't be more appreciative of the way it worked out, because I think it's exceeded our wildest expectations. I mean, we're 3.5 years now as members of state government and as members of the Lincoln community here, members of the administration, and we absolutely love it. We love the community. The children are well adapted, and certainly our expectations about the way that we've been able to impact the people that we serve exceeds even my expectations of what was achievable. So
that's awesome. And we've had a couple guests on the show who have run for an elected position. And I think that's where my mind usually goes when I think of public service. And in truth, that's a very, very tiny slice of the overall pie. And so since you're the first guest in this capacity, I'd love for you to paint the picture, whether it's right now or the last couple of years, give us a sense of like, what sort of things do you do? What does your daily life look like? What's some of the impact you've seen from your work?
Yeah, so great question. And I think what you're speaking to is probably consistent with what a lot of the public perception is. But just to use Nebraska state government as an example, we have 18,000 employees in Nebraska state government, right? So we'd be the equivalent of a pretty large, we're we'd be the equivalent of about a $10 or $11 billion private sector business, right? And of those 18,000 employees in Nebraska state government, maybe 100 of them are elected, maybe less if you count the legislature and all the various executive branch positions that are elected. So the overwhelming amount of the work is done by people in unelected positions. And all of the work is very much consistent with the same types of functions and services that similarly situated private sector companies need to do. So for example, human resources, you know, you can't manage a 18,000 person organization without some pretty mature human resources function and organization and service delivery. And that's true across the breadth of all of our services. So, you know, for listeners who are kind of new to thinking about government operations, but maybe have some familiarity with general business operations, you know, we have about 20 different agencies underneath the governor's operational control, ranging from Veterans Affairs to transportation to revenue to the Department of Insurance, Department of Labor. And so I kind of use the analogy that, you know, these things are like vertical business units in a large company, right? And they all need to be supported from a business process perspective. And so that's where me and my agency come in, offering things like human resources support, and accounting support, and material and contract management support, and vehicle fleet maintenance, and just, you know, facility maintenance, and just all of the business processes and supports and infrastructure that go into any successful organization. Governments need those things too. And so, you know, for me, that's what's been particularly fulfilling, is to be able to bring experiences from the private sector in operations and human resources and apply them in a public service context. And because I loved the work, you know, I loved that work in the private sector and for Intuit, what was missing was that service component. And so I think what I would have your listeners kind of take away is, hey, if you're interested in continuing a career in public service or moving back into public service just for a season of your life, you know, just a recognition that we need those skills in government in the same way that our private sector counterparts need those skills.
I mean, when you say that, in some ways, it almost seems like what you're doing is like the major leagues of you think of the number of people employed by a government entity. And if I understand HR correctly, a lot of it's about having people in the organization be as efficient as possible. That's a different level to think of the breadth of experience, the different types of people. And it is like the military is an organization that needs to run day in, day out. This thing is like a tank built for the long haul. So the thought of you applying these HR skills in that context seems like it seems very intimidating. It's like it's a high stakes game with a lot of consequence that affects a lot of people relying on the government services.
Yeah, certainly, not the least of which because there's a lot of public scrutiny on what we do, right? And so that's where it's incumbent upon us to make sure, hey, it's ethics and integrity without compromise all the time. Make sure that we're being good stewards of the resources and the money that Nebraskans are investing in us. Making sure that we're doing everything we can to make sure the services that we're delivering are consistent with Nebraskans' expectations, because there is a lot on the line. And just like the military, you know, where lives are on the line at times, depending upon what you're doing operationally. In a similar way, we have, you know, veterans healthcare and child and family services and public assistance and a lot of people that we're serving who are in reliance on a lot of the services that we're delivering. And we need to do it well and with care and with good service. And so it absolutely is something for which there's a high degree of scrutiny and a high degree of expectation. But I'll tell you a little bit, and it's a bit of a pivot from your question. The other piece that's been kind of counterintuitive, to whatever degree my experience here in Nebraska is representative, is you can actually, I think, advance your career faster in public sector as opposed to the private sector. So, you know, just using my own career as an example, to be an HR executive or to be leading a 260-person organization, $150 million budget as I am now, a similarly situated position in private sector, I wouldn't have been able to obtain that level of responsibility at this stage in my career as I have been in the government. And I actually see that at all levels within our organization, that if you're capable and you can execute well and you're somebody who is you know, well-motivated and has a growth mindset and is willing to learn, you can actually advance your career and obtain experiences and skills and a level of responsibility within in a government and public sector perspective more easily and on a faster pace than you can in a similarly situated or similarly sized corporate type of organization, which, you know, for me, we use that as part of how we attract talent into our organization, is that we hope, you know, we can't compete on, you know, what you might earn from a salary perspective with a private sector organization, but what we can compete on is giving you responsibility and meaningfulness of your work and growth opportunity and learning so you can accelerate your career at a faster rate than you would be in any other context.
That's great. I had never thought like that. It does make me think of at least my perception of my time in the military, which is still like, I cannot believe the level of responsibility I was given at 21. And I hadn't thought of it, like you said, like a major advantage is the amount of responsibility as you demonstrate competence that you'll be entrusted with. That to me stands out as a real advantage of this sort of career path. And I know we've touched on a couple things. So I wanted to cover kind of the pros and cons for listeners about this form of public service. I know we've touched on definitely the act of contribution and feeling part of something bigger and that kind of speed of ability to gain more responsibility. What else stands out to you either as like pros and cons or why a listener with military background may love or hate this sort of job?
Well, I mean, I think it's all about attitude with anything that you encounter, right? And there certainly is bureaucracy, right? And so you were following a similar career trajectory as my own in the military, and there's certainly an ample amount of bureaucracy as a junior military officer that, you know, you feel like you're, as for me as a former surface warfare officer, you know, felt like I was driving the ship about 10% of the time, and 90% of the time I was running message traffic or reports or, you know, doing those types of things, right? And so there is an element of navigating the bureaucracy and encountering bureaucracy that is present, but that also I've learned is highly dependent upon just personal style and leadership and ability to kind of focus and drive and continue to pursue things with an intensity of effort. I haven't felt myself thwarted in any major initiative because of the typical stereotypical obstacles that you would expect to encounter in a government context. At times there you can be slowed down by politics and stakeholder management and bureaucracy and all those types of things, but that's present in almost any organization. And the same skills that make somebody successful navigating those types of obstacles in a civilian context make you successful navigating it in a public sector context, right? For me, the real value is the impact, the measurable impact that you can make on your community and serving your neighbors in the public sector as opposed to the private sector. And I'll just use my own career as a representative example. Again, I loved my time at Intuit. I have nothing but fondness for my experience there and how I developed as a leader at Intuit. And they are a wonderful financial services and software company. And even the mission I agreed with, which was, you know, making people's financial lives better. But as much responsibility as I had there, you know, it would have been difficult for me to identify, were we selling more TurboTax because of the work I was doing, or was the stock price moving because of the work I was doing? I could be reasonably sure that the answer to both those questions was no. Even as I knew I was making an impact for the people immediately around me and the people that I was serving. Here and in government, and I think this goes for just about any role in our organization, you can see the tangible impact of the work you're doing. You know, within my organization, we have about, well, we have facility maintenance and building management practitioners. And every day they keep our facilities operational so 18,000 people can come to work to serve Nebraskans, right? I mean, that's a tangible impact that they're making on behalf of their community and their neighbors. And that's true of every role in our organization, from the executive ranks down to the front lines. You know, for food service professionals in our veterans hospitals, you know, are serving their veterans and their clients and our community. And so it spans the spectrum of everything we do. I think everybody can feel empowered about the work that they do and a strong sense of pride and personal fulfillment for being able to give back to their community that for me was just not present in the private sector the way I enjoy it here.
What one question occurs to me, and I'm displaying some ignorance here, but I'm wondering about the volatility of a job in public service. I'm guessing that in your capacity, it's tied largely to the elected official. And so there's always, whether it's 4 or 6 years, like there's always kind of a reoccurring impermanence or chance of impermanence. And I'm just curious, because that does seem different from Intuit, and especially the military, which is the opposite, which is like very, very good job security. I'm wondering what that's been like for you, or if that's kind of top of mind of just kind of in this career path, relatively less job security than especially people in the military might be familiar with.
Yeah, I actually think it might be more analogous to the military experience than you might think at first blush, because military personnel are used to shifting jobs every 3 years, right? Or every 2 years. And so it's actually kind of good mental preparation for a position like this one. And so you're absolutely right. Particularly in my position, I serve at the pleasure of the governor. I have no expectations of serving after Governor Ricketts is in his second term now. You know, I very much hope to continue my career in public service, but don't have an expectation, nor would it be appropriate for me to have an expectation of serving the next governor. That would be incumbent upon the next governor to make that determination about filling out his or her cabinet. That having been said, it's actually helpful in one respect because it allows you to really get laser focused on what you can accomplish with the time that you have. And I know I have 3 years in this job. And within the universe of things that I can accomplish, it's actually pretty helpful to kind of narrow on, okay, what can we achieve in 3 years? And what will have an enduring benefit to Nebraskans once our season in this role and in this capacity is at an end. But as for the, you know, lack of long-term security, and I'm sure this is highly personal, but for me, I generally find that I kind of reach a point at which I'm not growing or learning or, you know, at about the 3 or 4 year mark in a new position. And that's generally the time where I'm starting to kind of think about, okay, what's next for me anyway? So that's never been something that's really inhibited me or, and I think that's to some degree that reflects the, you know, the development that I experienced in the military where you are rotating new positions every 2 or 3 years. The military is very deliberate about trying to develop you by exposing you to different positions so that you can gain new experiences and add greater value and have greater awareness of kind of the end-to-end operation. And almost every step I've taken in my career subsequent to that has been kind of similar spacing or kind of pacing with respect to my career steps. So short answer is, yeah, no, there isn't job security in as much as, you know, you serve at the pleasure of the governor or whoever your appointing authority is. And And you need to make sure that you're delivering consistent with their expectations. But at the same time, you know, it's not something that's dramatically different than what people are experiencing in the job market today. And that, you know, many job seekers now don't really have an expectation of being in a role much longer than that type of kind of period. So
that's a great answer. And I love so much in there, but the two things that stand out is I appreciate this sense of like not knowing, not having that certainty makes you laser focused on what you want to accomplish. I think that's awesome. And then I also love like the, you know, the impression I get is the true act of service of like, you are literally serving. And if another governor comes in and he thinks that someone else can do the job better, great, have that person do it. It's like literally, you know, the story, maybe I'm romanticizing it, but it's like everyone's trying to make the organization better. And I appreciate too, what you're saying is that our own expectations change every 3-4 years. That's true for me as well. And so being honest about that of like, I'm not looking for a job for 50 years. I'm looking for something right now where I can grow and meets my needs. And maybe there'll be another opportunity that will be better aligned for my family and I. But I love that flexibility rather than this hallucination of permanence that doesn't really exist, or that certainty that we all crave that's probably not even a valid thing.
Yep.
What about if someone listening is fired up, they want to go deeper on this. I always like to ask about recommended resources. That could be books, podcasts, blogs, conferences. What would you recommend that people should check out that might give them more knowledge about here, about this whole field?
Well, if folks are interested in government service specifically, you know, I would have them reach out again. You know, my lesson from the start that I learned the hard way, leveraging your personal network. You know, if you know somebody who is in government service, if you have a, you know, a local elected leader for whom you're in their district or their area, they can usually be a good resource to kind of connect you to information or to other people. You know, if the state of Nebraska is representative of other states and other public entities, you know, we hire 2,000 people a year, right? And at any given time, if you were to go to our jobs page, you would find 300 to 400 different positions that we're advertising for that, you know, range from executive level leaders to law enforcement officers to corrections officers to facility management practitioners or HR practitioners. I mean, literally across the gamut. So, it's a field for which I think is highly accessible to particularly people who are military veterans. Most states, most public employers have veterans preferences with their hiring. We certainly do in Nebraska. Then my other advice would be just, you know, read everything you can, but I generally advise focus on the things that you're passionate about. You know, focus, you know, whether it's obtaining additional education, or if it's just kind of reading for a recreational perspective and investing in development of the things that you're particularly passionate about, and then trying to be innovative and entrepreneurial about finding an opportunity that aligns with those passions. Yeah, I think that would be basically my advice. And then I would also just offer myself as a personal resource to any of your listeners. Anybody is welcome to connect with me, and I'm happy to be a resource to anybody who's attempting to continue their career in public service, whether it be in the state of Nebraska or elsewhere.
Awesome. One other thing that just occurred to me is what your advice is around education and civilian work experience, because you have 2 advanced degrees. You've also had 7-8 years of Intuit under your belt. How should listeners interested in public service think of both advanced education and civilian work experience before doing that?
Well, I would say any more, an advanced degree is really a differentiator in any employment context, right? Public sector or private. Having a 4-year degree is pretty much table stakes. So having an advanced degree becomes kind of a differentiator for career advancement or making yourself competitive for an opening and getting your resume to the top of the stack. But in my experience, it doesn't particularly matter what the advanced degree is. And so to that end, I usually advise pursue something that you're passionate about and enjoy. For me, that was political science for my master's in law for the JD. And I say pursue something you're passionate about and enjoy, because it's just too much work to be doing something that you don't enjoy, right? It's a lot easier to be studying in the middle of the night if you're interested in the subject matter than if you're not. Which was my main problem with the Naval Academy. It just, electrical engineering and me didn't agree. It didn't matter how much time I spent on it, right? So in a similar way, I just encourage people to study, you know, what you're passionate about, what you enjoy. And then I think, you know, there's ample opportunities to just think entrepreneurially about how you can weave the knowledge that you obtain into a way, in a way that's beneficial to your career trajectory, right? And apply those experiences and that knowledge in the context of your career or your professional role. That's just a function of entrepreneurial and an entrepreneurial and an innovative mindset, less than the particular subject matter you're pursuing. If your question was to what level of where to mix private sector and other experiences in there, you know, I think I was benefited from pursuing my graduate degree, you know, in my late 20s after I had the benefit of my military experience and a little private sector experience. I think it gave me a different perspective in the classroom than some of the my peers in the classroom who were doing it just after their degree. But I'm not sure how practical it is to really design your educational objectives around those types of considerations. I mean, for me, it was just, hey, when did I have the space in my life from my career and with kids and family that I could, you know, fit those things in, and it worked. It was less purposeful than saying, hey, I want to have this amount of professional experience before I go pursue that degree. It was more just practically, where do I have space in my life to go obtain this credential?
That's awesome. Well, I always like to leave the last question open-ended, and I know we've got 4 or 5 minutes left here, but I want to give more space than normal because there's so little I know about this career path. And so I'm sure there's things that I haven't asked about, things that we haven't covered. So I'd love to give you the last couple minutes here to whatever's top of mind for you, whatever you think would benefit listeners, kind of give you the run of the show to say what you need to say.
Wow. I guess I would just say, you know, I would use it as an opportunity to kind of double down on a point I made earlier, which is, you know, my career advice has changed over the years. And as much as I used to advise people to think, okay, where do you want to be in 20 years? And what skills do you need to obtain to, you know, be competitive for that position? And then design back so that you're hitting the right professional wickets to obtain those skills and put yourself in a position where, you know, you aspire to be. But again, my reflection on the way my own career trajectory has taken me is that that isn't at all how I've built my own career. The way I've built my own career is just following things that I've been passionate about, trying to deliver really, really well in the role that I was in, and learn as much as I could, really put myself in a position of having a growth mindset, and then walking through doors when opportunities are presented. And so, you know, in a similar way, that's kind of the advice I give, you know, career and job, career builders and job seekers is, you know, follow passions. Within the public sector, that's really easy to do because there's just so much opportunity and so many different things that we're delivering in terms of services. If you care about, you know, children in disadvantaged circumstances, you can work in child and family services. If you care about veterans, you can work in veterans affairs. If you care about rehabilitative justice, you can work in corrections. If you care about keeping your community safe, you can work in law enforcement. Or if you care about, you know, HR and business services, accounting, I mean, contract management, law, there's literally an open field in front of you in government service that you can step into and serve and develop and grow your career and work on something that you're passionate about, and probably advance your career in terms of scope, responsibility, and impact at a rate that's faster than what you would experience on the private sector side. So yeah, with the opportunity to close and make a final pitch for public sector work, that would be it.
That's awesome. And I love this sense too of listeners who've listened to my interview with Cal Newport, like that the so good they can't ignore you thing, which is, as I view it from you, it's like not necessarily having this master plan, like doing what seems right, doing your best job, getting as sharp as you can, and being open to unexpected opportunities. I think that's one of the things I take away from your story is like it wasn't like you whiteboarded out this master plan. Things have seemed to work out really well, but a lot of it has come from doing great work and just opening, you know, open to taking your family where seems right next. And yeah, it makes me excited for listeners to hear your story, but it also makes me excited to see the next, you know, five chapters you have and where that takes you with that mindset. I imagine it's going to take you some exciting spots, and I'm excited to see, see where that is.
Thanks, Justin. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. And every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org, there is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly. And the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members, but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.